Do you like movies? Then Netflix is the place for you. Would you like to support this podcast? Use the red stamp-shaped Netflix affiliate banner link in the show notes at truckertompodcast.com for a free trial and instantly begin streaming movies right to your computer or TV set-top box.
Hello, Tom. This is your wake-up call from your new alarm clock. Wake up. Wake up. Are you awake, Tom? Time to get up. It's getting up time, Tom. Quit fooling around. Get out of bed. Up, 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 up. Come on now.
Tango Tango Papa 1391. August 10, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Wisconsin, Rapids, Wisconsin. There was no podcast last night. I spent the night, made it there, I guess it was a little after midnight, made it to Superior, Wisconsin, and then got up this morning and had a load of beer, so it was about four. I was parked at this little truck stop, probably about four or five miles away from the beer distributor. And so delivered the load. That didn't take very long. And then it wasn't too long. They sent this load that picks up here Tuesday morning at Wisconsin Rapids, which I think it's over kind of more in the Green Bay area. Actually, I'd have to look at the map. I just kind of followed the GPS over here. And then that load delivers at Burlington, Wisconsin, tomorrow. So I picked the, I'm at the place, Cold Storage, where I'm picking the load up at here at Wisconsin Rapids. And then that delivers 180 miles from here at Burlington, Wisconsin. So I think, and I'm just kind of guessing that that's probably south of here, but I don't know. We'll figure it out. South, maybe south and east. I don't know. Follow the GPS. So anyway, it was a pretty nice day today, actually. I think the warmest temperature I saw was about 91 degrees, and in fact, this one truck stop I stopped at, I went in and got something to eat in a restaurant, and the waitress in there was asking me how I was coping with the heat, and I said, heat? This isn't heat. You want heat? Go to Arkansas or someplace like Arkansas or Texas, you'll get heat. So it was in the, like upper 80s, and just kind of depended. It varied a little bit, but, so I guess these people think it's hot. But I guess they're used to colder temperatures up here. This is Wisconsin, and I think they do get their more than their fair share of cold weather sometimes. So, and I don't think it generally, I bet it could get to 100 degrees here, but I bet it's a fairly rare event. So, you never know. So anyway, I've got the top 10 box office. There are some new movies that came out. And then, it's been a while. I've got some of these old movies. A lot of these are some of them are actually, I got one from the 30s, and most of them I think are from the 50s, and it's been a while since I've played any of these, and some of them, they're very interesting to kind of watch and just even to listen to. So I've got those Probably not going to be able to play all of them, but, you know, just kind of keep them in reserve. So let's jump right on into the top 10 box office. So this was for the week starting August the 6th, 2010. So there's a new movie at the number one position. It's called The Other Guys. It had a weekend total of $35,543,162. It's in 3,651 theaters. The weekend screen average was $9,735. And so here is the trailer for The Other Guys.
Tell me once again why I got on this roof.
I chalked that up to bad life choices.
In the toughest city in the world, nobody fights crime like these guys.
Somebody call 911. Holy
And then there's the other guys.
Stop humming that song.
We know.
All the gunfights, all the car chases, all the sex we don't want to have with women, but we have to, all due to what you guys do.
And we do it again and again.
Hey, if I want to hear you talk, I will shut my arm and work your mouth like a puppet.
Peace out.
Yeah. Real characters.
Yeah. You stopping me?
What?
I think you're a fake cop.
I hear a guy who's probably a little insecure.
All units, we've got a possible jumper.
We all know you're in a very dark place right now.
I'm gonna do it!
You're feeling as if sweet death is your only release.
Oh, we got a second jumper!
Oh, look, he's fine!
Hi.
Who are you?
I'm his wife.
This is a ball and chain.
Oof.
Come on, seriously, who is that?
I am a real cop.
I'm working on a huge case. You're coming with me.
It's a wooden gun.
Oh! Listen up. We need your cooperation.
Run!
We are doing a lot of property damage. Oh, cool, a helicopter.
Where'd you learn to drive like that?
Grand Theft Auto.
I want to do good cop, bad cop. I come strong, and then you come in.
Got it.
I want to know everything now.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you. You're reasonable.
You want to talk to me?
I thought you said bad cop, bad cop.
I am a peacock. You gotta let me fly.
Pick another bird. Peacocks, they don't fly, Terry. They don't, do they?
Just let them have it, Captain.
The other guys.
When it explodes behind them, there's no way! The movie industry is completely irresponsible for the way they portray explosions!
So that was the trailer for The Other Guys. Apparently that's supposed to be a sort of a comedy type thing, and I don't know. Doesn't appeal to me all that much. So anyway, number two on the list is Inception. And it's been in release for 4 weeks at this point. This week it grossed $18,505,470. It is in 3,418 theaters. It had a weekend screen average of $5,414. And the gross to date is $637,569. Number three is new on the list. It just came out. It's called Step Up 3D. It had a weekend total of $15,812,311. It's in 2,435 theaters. It had a screen average of $6,493. It has, let's see, so that's new on the list. And so here is the trailer for Step Up 3D.
What is it that you love about dance?
Everything you need to know is in my dancing.
Everything.
What you saw before is just the beginning. Welcome to my house.
Think of a house as like a super crew. Dancers work together, live together, battle together. It's crazy, right?
This place is incredible.
Check this. It's the biggest battle ever. You up for a little competition?
I never lose.
Some people learn to dance, others are born to.
People dance because dance can change things.
One move can bring people together. One move can make you believe like you're something more. One move can set a whole generation free.
We should get to rehearsal.
That's so sick.
Yeah.
All right, so there was the trailer for Step Up 3D. Doesn't appeal to me. It's it's got a lot of dancing in it, choreography, so some people that might appeal to, I don't know, but not something I would even watch on Netflix, I don't think. Number four is Salt, and it's been in release for 3 weeks. It had a weekend total of $10,908,204. It's in 3,317 theaters. It had a screen average of $3,288. And the gross to date is $91,788,345. Number five on the list is Dinner for Schmucks. It's been in release for 2 weeks. It had a take this week of $10,375,397. It's in 3,004 theaters. It had a theater average of $3,453. And the gross to date is $46,620,949. Number six on the list is Despicable Me. It's been in release for 5 weeks. It had the take this week was $9,283,360. It's in 3,413 theaters. It had a week, an average this week of $2,720. And the gross to date is $209,287,345. Number seven on the list is Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore. It had it's been in release for 2 weeks. It had a week, the take this week was $6,902,116. It's in 3,705 theaters. It has, the theater take was $1,862. And the gross to date is $26,428,266. Number eight on the list is Charlie St. Cloud. It had a take this week of $4,700,490. It's been in release for 2 weeks. It's in 2,725 theaters. The theater average is $1,724, and the gross to date is $23,496,620. Number nine on the list is Toy Story 3. It had a take this week of $3,119,088. It's been in release for 8 weeks. It's in 1,714 theaters. Theater average was $1,819. And the gross to date is up there. It's $386,387,342. And finally, a new movie. No, it's not a new movie. Why is it? This is weird, because I've never seen this one before. It says it's been released for 5 weeks, but I think what happened with this is a kind of an oddball. The name of this is The Kids Are All Right, and apparently it kind of, even though it's been on the release, you know, it's been in release for 5 weeks, somehow it managed to break the top 10. It's, which is kind of weird. You know, it's a limited release. So anyway, The Kids Are All Right is number 10 on the list. It's been in release for 5 weeks. It had a weekly take of 2,597,177 dollars. It's in 994 theaters. It had a theater average of $2,612, and it says the gross to date is $14,040,182. So that's kind of oddball. Most of the time, you know, in all the time I've been going through these lists the past few months, I've never seen one that just, you know, that's already been in release that somehow breaks the top 10. Unless they've got a wrong number in here, but that's kind of weird, because usually once they're in release, then they, you know, once they've been released, you know, they're going to do their best that first week as a rule. This one may have gotten some word of mouth going, I don't know, but in any case, here is the trailer for The Kids Are All Right.
Hey, Bug.
Don't be back late.
I know.
Come give us a hug before you go.
Hugs.
Hug her. That's what she's there for.
Have you thought any more about making that call?
That could really hurt Mom's feelings.
How can you not even be curious about it?
Each of my moms had a kid with your sperm.
Like in both of them.
Uh-huh. Like in gay.
Right on.
Cool. I
love lesbians.
Great.
I get it. He's their biological father and all that crap. Like, we're not enough or something?
I never thought they'd use my stuff.
Why not? I'd use it.
Donor dad? Stone Cold Fox.
Is he single?
First of all, ew.
We met him, and that's cool. And now we can move on.
I want to see him again.
You do?
You do? So great to meet you.
Go easy on the wine, hon. Stay tight.
Okay. Same goes for the micromanaging. Okay.
So how'd you two meet?
I was a resident, and Jules had an emergency.
My tongue was numb,
and I told her to relax,
and then
my tongue started working again.
Oh, my God.
The plan was to limit his involvement.
You're not going to stick that, bro.
He's not a father. He's our sperm donor.
I just keep seeing my kid's expressions in your face.
Really?
Really?
I feel like he's taking over my family.
Oh, wow. Okay. What's that look you're giving me?
That's no look. That's just my face.
Driving home on a motorcycle. This is something I just never allow.
Mom, I'm 18 years old. I've just felt so far away from you lately.
Why'd you donate sperm?
It just seemed like a lot more fun than donating blood. Hey, I'm glad I did it.
Marriage is hard. Two people, year after year. Sometimes you stop seeing the other person.
To an unconventional family.
Okay, so that was the trailer for The Kids Are All Right, and I might watch that one streaming on Netflix, and it, from the looks of it, it's not going to be long, and it's going to be there, you know, kind of depending on what the producers do with it, you know, if they allow it or not. But, you know, usually a movie like this will end up on there very quickly. So I might, you know, it looks like it has, it might have potentially some interesting moments in it, possibly. It's, you know, it's kind of presented as a sort of a, maybe a really offbeat sort of comedy, but, you know, with the gay moms, and then the premise is that the sperm donor shows up, and the daughters kind of, you know, like him or whatever and want to spend time with him, and then it kind of creates tension between the two moms, you know, the lesbian moms. So I don't know, kind of weird, but looks like it might have some potentially interesting moments in it. So anyway, I've got some of these old films that I got from archive.org. This first one I'm going to play is from RCA, and they're introducing the television remote control. It's revolutionary 7-function remote control. So here we go.
And here it is, the greatest advance in television since color television itself. The ultimate in performance and convenience. 7-function remote control color television, so beautiful it enhances any decor. Clean, modern styling. No knobs or gadgets in sight. Superb cabinetry, mastercrafted of the finest woods. But the outstanding feature of this great new color set, the one big feature that sets it apart, is an amazing new wireless wizard electronic remote control. So perfected, you can operate every control, all 7 functions, and each function is completely variable. Tint, color, brightness, volume, fine tuning, channel selection, on off. You can tune either with the remote unit from your easy chair or use the push button panel in the cabinet. Here, hidden, is the push button panel. It operates exactly in the same way as the wireless remote unit. These rocker bars control all of the necessary tuning functions. To use the 7-function wireless wizard remote control, turn on the power for the remote amplifier at the set. From then on, the set is operative on remote push-button tuning. This red button lights up and signals that the remote amplifier is on and ready for use. Take the remote unit from its handy storage space, and you're set for hours of pure pleasure. Enjoy your favorite programs, black and white or color. Turn the set on, select your channel, see all color shows in living color. Once you've adjusted fine-tuning for each channel, you never need touch fine-tuning again, either at the set or on the remote unit. But if you want, touch, and you can adjust fine-tuning to suit your taste at any time. If you overtune on this or any other control, just push the companion button to reverse the direction of the control. In the same way, press this rocker bar to adjust the color, variable all the way from black and white to maximum color intensity. To adjust the tint control for natural face tones, press the right rocker bar, or the left. Lets you enjoy the picture you want the way you want to see it. Right at your fingertips, adjust brightness. Lighter, darker, Like all the controls on this remote unit, the volume is fully variable. Select any volume you want. Should the telephone ring or guests arrive, and you want to lower the sound for conversation, turn the volume down to your taste. Or surround yourself with room-filling four-speaker sound. To change channels, press this bar. See all regular programs in crisp, clear, black and white. This selector button changes channels clockwise in ascending order to pre-selected local channels. While this front window channel indicator lets you know at a glance what channel you're viewing, even from across the room. This button changes channels counterclockwise to lower numbered stations. When you want to turn off picture and sound, just press this button. It turns off the set amplifier, but the separate remote control amplifier is still on, ready for you to return to any later program you wish to see. To turn off this separate remote amplifier, press this button on the push button panel. When the red pilot light is extinguished, you know both amplifiers are turned off. Yes, here is the ultimate in television, a supreme achievement in television engineering. A color set that puts RCA Victor years ahead in dependable performance, armchair convenience, luxurious styling. A set where the pride of ownership is truly second only to the pleasure.
Okay, so that was from probably sometime in the 1950s. And it was obviously it was an RCA promotional film. And it was introducing the remote control. one of the things, when I was listening to this, and it always kind of strikes me, is that, you compare that to the ads today, and they're assuming, with these ads, they're sort of assuming that the customer is, there's a certain dignity to these. They're assuming that the customer's sort of sophisticated and, and they're not talking down to the customer. They're kind of really, there's a certain dignity, is the only way I can describe it, or the best way I can describe it. There's a certain dignity to these ads, and they're assuming that the customer is wanting something of good quality, and it's kind of interesting. I've got another one here, and this is where this was from probably made in the 50s, but they're kind of talking about when RCA introduced television in 1939. And so let's listen to that.
After 10 years of experiment, television, first shown to the public at the World's Fair, now takes its place as a new American art and industry. With the inauguration of regular television broadcast from NBC, one of the RCA services, set owners in metropolitan New York enjoy the novel experience of receiving pictures through the air. But an examination of the set contributes little to an understanding of the subject. Except for the screen and slanted mirror that reflects the image to the audience, it is much like a radio in appearance. But in the RCA Victor laboratories, where television equipment has been developed, we get a better view of the tubes that have added two new words to our vocabulary: the iconoscope for the camera and the kinescope for the receiver. The iconoscope is mounted behind the lens in this crude laboratory camera. The lens focuses the image of the experimental chart upon a metal plate in the tubes, and the iconoscope turns the image into electricity. In a nearby laboratory, receiver, the kinescope tube is inserted. This tube receives the electrical impulses created in the iconoscope tube and recreates the image. As the tube is turned on, we see the pattern of the scanning beam of electrons that moves back and forth across its face over 13,000 times a second and carries the electrical impulses that create the picture. In the laboratory, the iconoscope and kinescope are connected by wire. But in actual broadcast, the NBC television transmitter atop the Empire State Building sends the program out from this antenna by imposing it on a very short radio wave, which acts as a carrier for both the picture and sound. These short radio waves travel only in a straight line and cannot follow the Earth's surface. Therefore, the limit of television is the distance from the antenna to the horizon. From the Empire State Building, a program can be sent only as far as the eye can see on a perfectly clear day. In New York, programs are sent to the transmitter over a special cable from the television studios in Radio City, 3/4 mile away, or are sent by radio to the transmitter by the mobile units, which cover sporting events, outdoor celebrations, and spot news of all kinds. A mobile television unit consists of two large trucks. One of these is a rolling control room and amplifier, and the other is a small radio transmitter which sends the program over the air to the main transmitter in the Empire State Building. Typical of programs covered by the mobile television units is a horse race, and this unit pulls into the racetrack early in the morning to start the elaborate preparations of setting up to cover the race. In the rear of one truck are reels of the special coaxial cable that carries the picture from the camera to the trucks. While this is dragged out, engineers raise the antenna on top of the truck from which the program will be broadcast, and the cameramen set up the portable iconoscope camera atop the grandstand. Inside the truck, equipment is tested, and the coaxial cable is raised to the roof of the stand to connect camera and trucks. With a connection made, the camera is turned on for a test. Engineers stand by as race time approaches. Then on top of the stand, announcer Clem McCarthy takes his place beside the television camera, and the program goes on the air.
Judge Hasten on the extreme outside keeps stepping out of his stall, delaying the start as the 12 thoroughbreds line up at the gate. Now they're all in there and behaving nicely. Look out, they're off. Interpreter number 2 breaks in front, and as the field races past the stands, it's Interpreter on top with Sunfax in second place. The field is closely bunched as they rush to the first turn, but they've a long way to go. It's still anybody's race. Down the back stretch, Sunfax is dropping back, and as they turn into the home stretch, Albert D leads by 2 lengths with Mundu at second ahead of a closely bunched field. Down the stretch, Albert D turns on more speed, increases his lead. He's too fast for Mundu it, and Albert D by 4 lengths is the winner.
As in radio, many television programs will come from the specially equipped studios such as this one in Radio City. Here, under the bright lights required for indoor broadcasts, preparations are underway to televise an orchestral program. The special lights of the television studios are placed under the direction of the cameraman. Most of these lights are suspended from the ceiling and controlled by cords, by means of which they can be raised, lowered, or turned by a technician on the floor below. In the control booth above the studio, the program director and engineers prepare for their part in the broadcast. Here, the picture and sound are amplified for their trip to the transmitter, and the quality is checked on a viewing screen. Cameramen and engineers wear earphones through which they receive instructions throughout the broadcast from the director. As the first step in the program, the title camera is trained on the printed titles, and these are sent out over the air. Then, at a signal from the director, the television broadcast gets underway. Each of the cameras used in this broadcast is making a different angle of the same scene. This long shot camera is permanently placed to get a view of the entire orchestra. A second camera on a wheel truck is used to make close-ups of the orchestra and its individual members, and this is rolled around the studio during the broadcast. On the screen in the control room, we see a scene made by the close-up camera. After this has run for a few seconds, the control engineer switches over to the other camera, and the scene changes to a long shot of the entire orchestra. The director manipulates the cameras to keep the scene changing and to avoid monotony, instructing the cameramen and engineers by telephone as the program progresses.
All right, switch to one. Now roll into a close-up of the string section. Now pan across the orchestra from the brass to the strings. Now back to your original position and pan over to include the conductor.
And so a new American industry has been born. Television is taking its place as another important and vital contribution to our daily lives. It is a modern miracle, a new public service produced by combining RCA laboratory science with manufacturing skill. The research problem of yesterday is the radio marvel of today. Another milestone of progress has been passed, and science has made a reality of the age-old dream of pictures from the sky.
Okay, so I said that was probably from 1950. I don't know. I bet that was, you know, that was probably, you know, probably it could have been 1939, but it could have also been in the early 40s as well. But, you know, in all of these, I think it's also interesting how they're explaining how this, how the new technology works. You know, do they do that in ads today? They do it on the internet, you know. Usually you go to a lot of times you go to a website and, you know, they'll, you know, that they're trying to sell some new service, and they'll tell you, they'll have a thing that explains how it works. And, I think that's important. If you can explain, you know, it's important, you know, in understanding, if you can explain how something works, how service works, especially, you know, they've got it patented or whatever, but if they can explain how it works, then, you know, it helps people to understand what it is. But TV ads today, I think, rarely explain anything. You know, it's just, you have all this fast cut stuff, and a lot of times they're, with the ads, you know, they're kind of putting people, you know, putting people down, to a certain extent. In a lot of ads, they're trying to create as much humor as possible, and sometimes that entails laughing at certain segments of the population. You know, but it's, I don't know, it would be interesting if someone would produce modern commercials that would, you know, kind of explain things. You know, how much would a modern commercial stand out, let's say, for some new product or service if it was produced in, you know, a style from the 1940s or 50s? That we're not used to seeing those, and that might really, you know, kind of stick out and gain some attention. I don't know. Well, I've got this other film here, and this is from 1953. And it was produced by the state of Oklahoma, and they're talking about mental hospitals. And, you know, now these were prevalent, you know, that there were state mental hospitals that were prevalent probably up until sometime in the 1960s and then the early 70s, and then they decided that they were going to, quote-unquote, mainstream these people. And many of these mental hospitals were closed down, and their patients ended up homeless. They ended up out on the streets. There are people that cannot take care of themselves for whatever reason. And, you know, I think it's ultimately cruel to just kind of dump people out on the streets. So, in any case, this is from 1953, and they're talking about mental hospital. You know, it's an Oklahoma mental hospital.
Christmas time, the holidays. Is this the way they end for me here in this place? A mental hospital, they call it. That's a fancy name, that is, but I know a better. The bug house. A place where they lock you up and then throw away the key. And now they've got me, too. Me, Fred Clanton. Fred Clanton, Fred Clanton. Is that really my name? Oh, everything's so mixed up. These grounds, these buildings, they're all so dark. Everything's dark, even the sky. I'll never get out. That George, he's turned them all against me. Even Betty. They keep talking about me. Why won't they let me alone? Oh, my God. Oh, no, don't let them take me in there. I'll never get out. Oh, God, what will happen to me now?
Fred now. What happens to all of them? The men and women from every walk of life who each year pass through doors like this, into the mental hospitals of our land. Here, in the story of Fred Clanton and the typical Oklahoma State Hospital to which he came, the spotlight focuses on these people. Many patients are old, and often theirs is a tragedy of hospitals such as this. The tragedy of fathers and mothers too old to work, rejected by their own children, classed as senile and committed to mental hospitals because there's nowhere else for them to go. Yet, given proper care, they can still adjust, make new friends to ease the passing of years. Some patients are disturbed, unable to care for themselves in normal life situations. Others are physically as well as mentally ill. Many are capable of limited adjustment, able to work at varied tasks within the hospital. There's the veteran returned from years of service overseas. The farmer who had never set foot outside his home county till he came here. Deterioration, chronic conditions, limit hope for some. Others may go home tomorrow. Meanwhile, they're living here. 3,200 men and women all gathered together in a modern mental institution, a city in itself, complete with every facility for effective treatment. Though shortages in hospital personnel do exist, patients are secure and comfortable, and most of them are happy. For while mere custodial care can never be enough, a favorable environment and human comforts are essential in any therapeutic system. For most, meals are served cafeteria style. Food is plentiful and good, an investment in patient health. Just baking the bread for 3,000 people is a man-sized job. Above all, though, these kitchen chores offer patients work, the therapy of busy hands. The laundry, more chances for patients to focus on specific realities outside themselves. First step along the road that leads to recovery
and release. The patients tell you the power plant smokestack is 525 feet tall. They seem to take a personal pride in it, maybe because power is so important here. The sick must have heat and light. There's water to be pumped and food cooked and laundry washed. Patients must be housed, and today's new hospital buildings center on human needs and comfort. Whether they provide living quarters or treatment facilities, whether they're for convalescents, older people, the tubercular, veterans, or occupational therapy, these modern structures are part of a long-range integrated plan to improve conditions for all who live within these grounds. Special units provide homes for nurses and attendants, for they too play a vital role in helping patients to regain health. In addition to the regular staff, student nurses come here to learn to recognize and care for the mentally ill. There are lakes for fishing. The hospital farm cuts operating costs, provides fresh truck and dairy products. And the familiar scenes, the work, help make patients from rural areas feel at home. They come from all sorts of homes, these patients, all kinds of backgrounds. But somewhere along the line, life became too much for them. Some apply for voluntary admission to the hospital, one of the three procedures by which residents may enter a state mental institution in Oklahoma. Many former patients return of their own free will when new troubles assail them. All applicants for voluntary admission are held a minimum of 15 days for examination before they may be released. Other patients are certified for admission by two competent medical examiners. This is the second method by which patients enter the hospital under the terms of Oklahoma's mental health law. The majority, however, come by court order, committed either by a judge or a six-man jury. This was the case with Fred Clanton.
Fred Clanton? Oh, yes. How are you, Fred?
Well, I'd be all right if they just let me alone.
Well, why don't you tell me about it?
You can't fool me. I know you're in with them, too.
Fred, I'm going to send you to the hospital. And if you will cooperate with those doctors, I think they'll be able to do you some good.
The admitting clerk records Fred's case history as soon as he enters the hospital, takes care of valuables until he's sufficiently improved to be trusted with them. Escorted to the receiving ward by an attendant, he's bathed and outfitted. He gets a blood test, part of the medical examination given each patient on admission. There's a chest x-ray also, and a spinal fluid test. Finally comes a neuropsychiatric check, designed to bring out data related to the patient's mental disorder.
They're turning my wife, you know, Betty, against me. Taking up all her time.
Why do you think they're doing you this way?
Well, I've been working on this for years. They don't know it, but I'm on to them. You see, If they can just get Betty to team up with them, then they'll all try to get together.
A clinical psychologist gives Fred a variety of specialized tests in order to make possible a more accurate evaluation of his total personality. Following the examination and testing, an informal meeting of the hospital staff arrives at a tentative diagnosis of schizophrenia, paranoid type. Fred benefits from the skill and experience of all members of the staff, as well as the psychiatrist to whose care he is assigned. Diagnosis and staff approval completed, the patient is transferred to a treatment ward for therapy. In Fred's case, insulin shock is prescribed, a common treatment for schizophrenia. Electroshock therapy may be recommended for other disorders. Hydrotherapy is useful in calming disturbed patients. So are sedative packs. But whatever the mode of treatment, it's essential that it be supplemented by an atmosphere of security and calm. The effective hospital must always serve as a refuge for its patients, a place where they can live quietly during that period of reorientation in which they learn how to achieve a better adjustment to the world outside. Degree of adjustment, the level of orientation, varies sharply from patient to patient. Some show a complete loss of contact with reality, dark shadows across disordered minds. In other wards are light and life, a return from private worlds to the here and now. As patients improve, they are moved to wards in keeping with their condition. They're given the opportunity for contact with others who are also getting better, shown that their status as individuals is recognized, that no matter what their problem, there still is hope. In Fred's case, insulin therapy brought relatively quick improvement. Close linked with it, helping further, was personal follow-up attention by the psychiatrist directing his treatment and care. Occupational therapy reinforced shock treatment, helped Fred to draw away from his feelings of antagonism and suspicion and move closer to reality. Boredom is always an enemy of the mentally ill. Now improving, Fred begins to take increasing interest in the wide variety of recreational facilities. Patients enjoy movies just as much as anyone. and a hot game of dominoes or pool or ping pong is always fun. The sewing room's popular, and a permanent wave may serve as a milestone of self-respect for many women, in spite of the bubble gum. Books mean so much to so many. Improvement brings added privileges, a more normal life. What could be better than an afternoon softball game? Friday dances give Fred a chance for contact with women on a social plane, help to spark his dormant pride. Religious services in the chapel offer inspiration. Then there's the happy day when Fred is granted grounds privileges.
Fine, Doctor. As a matter of fact, I feel like going back to work.
Well, you'll have to stay around the hospital for a few days. Maybe we can find you something to do here.
Oh.
How would you like to help us out around the hospital here?
I don't know whether there's much I can do or not.
We have quite a few jobs that you might do.
Mm-hmm.
For example, you might work up the dairy. You might help out in the garden. Or you might work over in the cafeteria. Or we might even be able to get you on the ground crew.
Ground crew?
Yes, sir.
I'd like that a lot, I really would.
Well, that's swell. You just report out there in the morning and everything will be all right.
In the morning?
Yes, sir.
What a difference it makes. At last, Fred can be outside once more, working, enjoying the sun and the seasons. There are the days when visitors come, the chance to talk again with Betty, and George comes too. And now, somehow, he doesn't seem quite as bad as he did before. It's not too long till the psychiatrist decides that Fred can try it for a while at home. He talks with Betty and with George, helps them to understand that they too have vital roles to play in aiding Fred to adjust successfully to the world outside. Then the words pass to the switchboard to call Fred in. How well he looks. A cigarette from the doctor. And Fred's hand is steady. Packing at last. A man can be proud of the things he's created with his own two hands, and a hospital can be proud too. Proud to see a patient face the world as a man again.
So this is it. Today I'm going home. 6 months it's taken. If I'd come here sooner, I might have been out in 3. But all I could think about was fear, the way everyone was all against me, how much I hated George, how wrong I was. Or no, not wrong, sick. And now that I'm well again, I can't help feeling just a little sad, the way you always do when you leave a place where you've lived, learned, and grown. But I am well, and I know it. I'm able to face the world again, my own hometown. I suppose there'll be some folks who'll stare and talk and sneer. But no matter what they say or do, one thing I know. These people here, this place and time, have given my life back to me.
Okay, so that was from 1953, and it was produced by the state of Oklahoma, kind of describing probably what's really an idealized version of a state mental hospital. You know, those places, as I say, they, you know, they had a horrible reputation in some cases. There was this movie, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, that came out, I think, sometime in the 60s that really, you know, wrongly or rightly, I don't know, gave, you know, the, you know, maybe a, you know, it probably got the movement started to end the state hospitals and kind of put people out on the street. You know, now what ended up happening? You know, those, a lot of those people end up homeless, and then they'll end up committing crimes, and they end up in jail. And so there's a lot of those, you know, the people that would normally be in mental institutions, either they're homeless or they end up in jail, or it's a revolving door. You know, so I don't know. If you look back in history, there have always been, there's always a certain percentage of the population. There are people that just cannot, they're totally dysfunctional for whatever reason. They cannot take care of themselves. And, you know, it's all well and good to try to mainstream them and put them into positions where they're, you know, they can live as normal lives as possible. But, you know, there are some cases where they're able to do that, but then in other cases they end up committing murders and causing all kinds of problems. You know, and a lot of them today, you know, they put them on different medications, and these people, they'll take, invariably what they do, they take the medications for a period of time. They don't like the way it makes them feel, because it just kind of zonks them out. Then they go off the medication, and then, you know, of course, then they become kind of uncontrollable again, and, so, I don't know, I think, you know, as much as I dislike the idea of government expenses and, you know, so on and so forth, that is one case where, you know, we should have state mental hospitals. We really should have. They don't necessarily have to be like they were in the 50s or earlier. But on the other hand, they do serve a function. And I think it's extremely cruel, as I've said before, I think it's extremely cruel to just dump people out on the street and say, well, we're mainstreaming you, here's your pills, and go make a life for yourself, when they can't do it. You know, they're just, for whatever reason, they're not capable of it, and then they end up in jail, or whatever else, or just living on the street. So, I don't know, it's kind of an ongoing problem, but it, you know, I think that's very cruel to just kind of stick people out that can't take care of themselves, just kind of dump them out on the street, and then, you know, they're homeless. You know, they end up in a city somewhere. Usually, they're, you know, every big city's got a number of these people that are just kind of living out on the street, you know, whatever. And it's a very cruel way to treat people, you know, because, as I say, there are people that just cannot, you know, no matter what you do, that there are people that cannot function for themselves. And, you know, they're just, you know, I don't know. We don't see that many of them, you know, the really nutty ones. There are still some state mental hospitals here and there. You know, a lot of them have gone away. A lot of them were closed probably in the 60s and the 70s. But there are still some, you know, for the very worst people, there are still some, you know, some state hospitals. And, you know, of course, you know, the really, nutty people, you know, just people that are just out of control end up in those places. And, you know, they, in some cases, I think they kind of compete for the space. So I don't know, but, in any case, probably better be wrapping this up and, see if I can get headed to bed here in a bit. And then I'm at, as I say, I'm at the place where I'm going to be picking the load up at, and, so I'll set my alarm clock and get up in the morning and go in there and let them know I'm here. And then, you know, they can begin loading the load whenever they, you know, whenever they're ready to do it. And then I'll, you know, the load delivers about, as I say, about 180 miles from here at Burlington, Wisconsin. And it's basically, from what the dispatcher said, it's a drop and hook on that end. So just as soon as I get the load there, I should be able to drop and hook. And then they'll probably, I have no doubt they'll come up with some other load probably right away. So anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.